Good afternoon, everyone. This is a meeting of the Intelligence and Security Committee. It's a committee set up under the Intelligence and Security Committee Act 1996. The purpose of the meeting is to conduct financial reviews of the NZSIS and GCSB and to report the outcomes of those reviews to the House of Representatives. As I said, the committee is not actually a select committee. It was established under the Intelligence and Security Committee Act 1996, and it has assigned to it the functions of examining the policy, administration, and expenditure of both the NZSIS and the GCSB, considering matters relating to those agencies referred to it by the House or by the Prime Minister, considering the agency's annual reports, and reporting accordingly to the House. Since 1996, the House, by notice of motion, has assigned responsibility for carrying out the financial reviews of both the NZSIS and the GCSB to this committee. In the review of intelligence legislation that came into effect in late September this year, there was an amendment to the Act, and that requires these financial reviews to be held in public. This is the first time such a public hearing has been held, and thus it's a significant opportunity to increase public understanding of the work of our intelligence community. The committee meeting today will comprise this hearing, which is open to the public and to the media, and it will be followed by a closed hearing to be attended by committee members, witnesses, and committee support personnel only. The object of a financial review, as many of you know, is to scrutinise each agency's performance, both financial and non-financial, against its targets in the previous financial year and its current operations as set out in its annual report. Financial reviews are not intended as an occasion for a more general review. It's important also to recall there are some matters the committee does not have authority to inquire into, and these are set out in Section 6, Subsection 2 of the Act. The committee's functions do not include inquiring into any matter within the jurisdiction of the Inspector General, as set out in Section 11 of the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security Act, those matters include the agency's compliance with the law, any complaints made against the agencies by a New Zealand person, any matter where the Minister or Inspector General considers a New Zealand person may have been adversely affected by any act or policy or procedure of the agencies, the propriety of particular activities of the agencies. The Act itself also prevents the committee from inquiring into any matter that is operationally sensitive, including any matter that relates to intelligence collection and production methods or sources of information. Finally, the committee cannot inquire into complaints by individuals concerning the activities of the agencies that are capable of being resolved under some other enactment. Some matters covered in the annual reports may be the subject of ongoing court action. Questions relating to them will need to be considered by me under the sub judice rule. This open hearing will be confined to issues covered in the unclassified versions of the annual reports. These have been tabled and the House are available to the public and are being provided to members of this committee. In some instances, witnesses may consider they can answer a question more fully in the closed hearing, and if so, the question can be taken up there. Closed hearings provide members with an opportunity to scrutinise the classified annual reports and the Auditor General's briefings that have been provided to them, and the committee's usual rule about secrecy will apply to proceedings of the closed hearing. So with those brief comments in mind, I would now ask Dr. Warren Tucker, the Director of Security of the New Zealand Intelligence Security Intelligence Service, to make a few preliminary comments and then be prepared to answer any questions.
Thank you, Chairman, for this most welcome opportunity to report on the work and value of the New Zealand Security Intelligence Service, the NZSIS, in this first ever Public Financial Review of SIS by the Committee. Today, in my opening remarks, I'll focus on three important areas relating to the service: our achievements during the year under review, keeping in mind that much of our operational work cannot be discussed in open session, the people who make up the NZSIS, and oversight and accountability. But let me begin by setting out briefly the context of our security and intelligence work in today's complex and globalised world. New Zealand is a small country a long way from anywhere. We're critically dependent for our livelihood as a country on the goods and services that we produce and export. As a small trading nation, therefore, our livelihood depends on a stable and relatively predictable international world order and on the rule of international law, as well as our ability to protect our intellectual property. That's why successive New Zealand governments have placed such emphasis on multilateral arrangements, but especially through the United Nations. It's why successive governments have contributed effort and resources, especially through defence deployments and our aid programmes, to stabilisation or peacekeeping missions across the globe, in Bosnia, the Sinai, or Afghanistan, for example. Closer to home, regional stability is important for New Zealand's well-being. So, again, defence and police missions to intervene and assist in countries such as East Timor and the Solomon Islands have been tangible evidence of New Zealand doing its bit to making a positive difference and contributing as a good international citizen. Intelligence collected and assessed by our intelligence community has been important for government in making these decisions to commit resources and effort, and also for those involved in carrying out such missions to do so as safely and as effectively as possible. And a quick scan of the globe serves to remind us all of the conflicts and tensions which undermine stability and which impact on New Zealand's wider interests. Of particular current concern are a small number of New Zealanders interested in travelling for the purposes of fighting in trouble spots such as Somalia, Yemen, and more worryingly, Syria. This poses new and very real risks to our domestic security environment should these individuals return home. Now, that's the big picture view of the context and value of the work of our agencies. For SIS, this work can be summed up as protecting New Zealanders and advancing New Zealand's interests. So turning quickly now to the NZSIS itself, it's important to understand that SIS is a very small service, approximately 230 people, and it has three distinct roles. First of all, we're a security clearance vetting service. Second, we're a security service focused on detecting and advising on dealing with threats to New Zealand and New Zealanders. This is our traditional role. In our legislation, these security threats are characterised broadly as terrorism, espionage, sabotage and subversion, and that which impacts on New Zealand's international well-being or economic well-being. And we face increasing challenges from today's speed of technological change and new manifestations of traditional threats through the medium of cyber. And finally, we collect foreign intelligence and support the work of other arms of government in seeking to achieve or improve the stability of our region. So SIS, as a small service, is essentially three agencies rolled into one and must make the tough choices concerning our allocation of resources and effort within the framework of government priorities. In doing all this, we're guided by government's focus on investing more heavily in frontline capability and the delivery of results, and on finding new and innovative ways to do our work. And just very quickly, a few highlights that are recorded in the annual report. The year in review has been a busy and eventful year operationally for SIS. We've provided significant support to the Defence Force, the New Zealand Defence Force deployment in Afghanistan. A request for support was received from the Chief of Defence Force in August of 2012 following a spike in Defence Force casualties. I was pleased to be able to deploy NZSIS personnel into Kabul and Bamian to help to mitigate this threat and to support the provincial reconstruction team up until their scheduled withdrawal in April of 2013. NZSIS made a material difference to that deployment and almost certainly saved lives. This would not have been possible without substantial Defence Force assistance and also without a small group of very capable NZSIS officers with experience in such high-threat environments. SIS provides a significant amount of protective security advice to New Zealand government departments. Security clearance vetting advice is the first and most important part of personnel security. This work currently makes up over a third of NZSIS activities. In the year under review, we vetted and provided advice regarding security clearances to more than 7,800 individuals. That's more than 20 for every single day of that year. SIS continued to progress a deep-seated program of enhancements to strengthen the security clearance vetting system. We've also taken the lead in a multi-agency program to strengthen New Zealand's protective security arrangements and behaviours to lift security awareness and culture in the public sector, focusing on protecting the key elements of people, places and information of national security significance. In early 2013, staff based in our headquarters in Wellington moved into Pipitea House alongside GCSB and with other organisations within the New Zealand intelligence community. The purpose of the move was to achieve deepened collaboration and an efficiency dividend for SIS and GCSB through joint operations and combined support functions. This is in line with the government's Better Public Services Programme. I'm pleased that GCSB has resumed its assistance with SIS investigations following the enactment of its new legislation. I'm expecting our collaborative efforts to increase and our partnership with GCSB to deepen over the next year as we find new ways of doing business together within the boundaries of each of our respective legislation. Within SIS, there is an increasing emphasis on more structured workforce planning, on developing staff through more challenging training programs and secondments, and on growing our future managers and leaders. After all, our people are the backbone of all that we do. Behind our operational achievements is a group of talented, highly motivated and professional New Zealanders who work for the service. These fine men and women are dedicated to making New Zealand a safer place, to protecting New Zealand lives and to contributing to New Zealand's standing in the international community. Their work is often thankless and can be dangerous. Sometimes it's conducted in unpleasant and unforgiving environments. They are our unsung heroes. New Zealand is a safer and a better place because of them. But all the individuals who work within SIS understand and appreciate the importance of oversight and accountability of an organisation of this kind. All of our investigations and operations are undertaken in accordance with our Act, which is the legal framework within which we work. We have robust internal policies and are subject to external oversight. And these oversight arrangements were strengthened earlier this year when the GCSB legislation was passed, and this is an important dimension in maintaining the public confidence that we need to do our work. So in closing, Mr. Chairman, can I say that there are still plenty of challenges ahead for NZSIS as an organisation, but we're an essential organisation that makes a material difference to protecting New Zealanders and New Zealand's interests. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my opening remarks.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tucker. You mentioned a large number of vetting exercises that are undertaken each year, and I think you spoke about some enhancements we've made to the vetting system. Are you able to tell the committee that the vetting system is functioning as you would wish, or are there further improvements that need to be made?
There are some minor adjustments that are still underway, but we have in fact largely completed the programme of work which we set out on a few years ago, a fundamental change to the vetting model, and it's considerably strengthened compared with how we were 5 or 6 years ago.
Right. Thank you. Now, Scott, do you have a question?
Yes, I'm
going
to
do
it.
Well, you don't need to.
No, that's fine. Right. Thank you very much. Notice in your financials such that we have in this particular part of the system, are you in a situation where total expenditure exceeds total appropriations? Could you provide any further information which would help the public, to the extent that you can, because I know there's limitations around this, understand both the trends and appropriations over time, and if there's anything that you can tell us about the reasons for the apparent imbalance of the two that you have?
I think he's referring to page 31.
31, indeed. Well, thank you, Mr. Cunliffe. Yes, I can indeed answer that question. We report there our total appropriation, which is in effect the money that Parliament gives us for the year. But it's important to realise that we also accumulate depreciation in respect of capital, which has been expended in previous years, and that's so that we can replace those items at the end of their life. And under the Public Finance Act, we are able to hold that accumulated depreciation and to use it for replenishment and replacement of capital items. In this year in particular, your question had several parts, but in this year in particular, if I could just highlight that we have relocated our headquarters from Defence House into Pipitea House. So there was some capital expenditure which was, if you like, a one-off in terms of making good in Defence House when we left, but also relocating our data centre, for example, and various other elements of our infrastructure into Pipitea, which incurred capital expenditure. In terms of the trend line for appropriation over the years, we have had some increase in expenditure in appropriation going back 5-6 years ago, in the period between September the 11th and the period of the Labor-led coalition. Our appropriation has remained pretty stable and static since then, although we have had an adjustment for this year that we are entering into now, another $2 million.
The upshot of the question, although given the limitations in data, it's almost a qualitative question, do you feel you've got the resources you need to do the job
It's true to say that we could always use more, but I'm really delighted with the additional funding that government has given us to further increase our capability and capacity over the coming several years.
We've got a couple of questions on the relationship between the two agencies represented here. Good doctor. A review of the ZSIS legislation was passed. Is it going to be reinstated?
That's a question for government. What we did was to look at our legislation, which was enacted initially in 1969. It was in the Cold War, and it was also in an era when the general presumption was that if things were not unlawful, then it was lawful to do them. And I think jurisprudence in New Zealand has, in relation to our kind of agencies, has switched completely the other way around, which says that we should not be doing it unless there is an express element in our legislative framework to do that. Further, I think the world has become more complicated, more complex, and there are scenarios and risks which we have identified in our review, which in fact government would probably be wishing us to assist with, but which under our current framework we couldn't. So the review was essentially about future-proofing rather than about fixing or addressing issues that are staring us in the face at the moment.
So should we take it then that although it's a decision for government, in your view there is no reason why the review should be reinstated?
At some point when government feels comfortable doing that, yes.
In your report, the public report, there is quite a chunk of mention about cyber espionage, which obviously is more directly the role of your partner agency and DCSB. Can you tell us what role the SIS plays in the cyber espionage space to the extent that you're able to? Because I think what the public would be interested to know is a little more about the interface between the two agencies, recognising, of course, that quite quickly we get into an area where we can't.
Look, that's a very good question, and I'm going to characterise the answer in a couple of ways. First of all, cyber is a team sport. It's a truism that it's not computers that hack computers, it's people that hack computers. So our role, when you look at the cyber, at the espionage and sabotage dimensions that's a threat which are incorporated into our act, there is a cyber component and dimension for that. So it does, understanding the why and the who and the what are they trying to achieve is really, really important. So that's where kind of our mandate comes in. But the technical stuff that GCSB does is vitally important as well. So what we have is the National Cyber Security Centre, and it's a multi-agency grouping which is housed by and led by GCSB, and we contribute to that.
Just to use a broadcasting IT analogy, a nice safe one. There's been experience around the world where broadcasting and IT are converging and starting to have common regulators, and that's partly because the technology is driving integration of broadcasting platforms and telecommunication. That's using that analogy, are you aware of any discussions, any exploration or any options development around further integration or potential merger of your two agencies?
Well, again, that's a matter for government, and it is possibly one of the things that the 2015 review may well look at. But that is
a
matter for
government. The 2015 review, you're referring to what was said at the time of the DCSB debate, that there will be a full review of all intelligence legislation in 2015, and I think thereafter, if a there's a mandatory review provision in the legislation.
Every 5 years or so. I think.
Every 5 years.
Yeah, I am referring to that.
With your permission, can I just clarify the question? Mm-hmm. I wasn't asking about any decision. Mm-hmm. I was asking about whether a director was aware of any discussion or exploration of options in that regard, which would, of course, be a prior stage and within its purview of the director rather than being a matter for the government.
I'm not aware of any current discussion in New Zealand about that. I can say that in some other jurisdictions overseas, these discussions have happened, and in one or two cases, agencies such as Ends in Mind have in fact merged.
Would it be a fair question to ask of whether any such review should consider what might be lost in terms of the transparency of the respective roles of the two agencies while also seeking operational efficiency?
I think, Mr. Cunliffe, if I might be so bold, I think we're starting to get into a degree of speculative forecasting. 2015 review, I think.
Yeah, thanks. Mr. Lyle, do you have a question?
Very soon for some
It certainly is higher than normal, and in fact, historically, NZSIS has had uncomfortably low turnover. But I think there are a few one-off elements here. First of all, we relocated our headquarters, as I said earlier, and there were a number of staff, because of our demographics, a number of staff who were looking at retirement, and a number of them said, hang on a minute, do I really want to go through all this upheaval and then retire 6 months later? Secondly, we created a shared services arrangement between our two organisations that led to several redundancies in that process, and finally we had several redundancies as a consequence of our downsizing of our Christchurch office as a follow on from the Christchurch earthquake as a temporary arrangement.
Second question, is there anything you can tell us about progress on Project Zenith?
I certainly can. We're leading that. Project Zenith is a whole-of-government approach to looking at protective security and to establish a framework which replaces the current arrangements, the security in the government sector, protective security manual and the IT security manual. So this is intended to put in place a much more robust and prescriptive framework which gives chief executives of departments and Crown entities a benchmark to judge themselves by, and also to institute a training program, an implementation program, and a compliance and audit program associated with that to give government better assurance about the protective security arrangements in government.
Thank you, Dr. Norman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As part of your function around information security, do you believe that you have a responsibility to protect New Zealanders' private information from large-scale collection by offshore agencies?
No, I think our role is in relation to primarily government information and Crown entity information.
So if an offshore agency was engaged in large-scale collection of New Zealand's private information, which would inevitably involve some level of cyber intrusion, and you wouldn't consider that part of your responsibility?
No, we wouldn't, but I think if I could turn to my colleague, The general issues associated with the security of New Zealand's IT infrastructure across the board and other infrastructure is something which has been identified as being a GCSB responsibility.
We'll get to the GCSB in a minute, but mm-hmm. my question is this, because the Prime Minister, your Minister, has mm-hmm. made public statements that he does not know whether the NSA, the National mm-hmm. Security Agency mm-hmm. based in the United States, mm-hmm. is or is not engaged in large-scale surveillance of New Zealand's private information. Mm-hmm. You do not consider that as the NZSIS you have any responsibility to protect New Zealand's private information from mass collection by the NSA?
I don't see NZSIS having a role like that. That's the short answer to your question, Dr. Norman.
And so are you engaged in any mass collection of New Zealanders' information?
Absolutely not.
Section 6.2.
Absolutely not.
And so in terms of the Kim.com case, what was the involvement of the SIS in that case?
There was no involvement. In fact, I was unaware of it until just prior to it becoming public.
Okay, thank you.
Just a moment. promoting the operational highlights in the public report, you've noted the presence of personnel in support of the New Zealand Defence Force in Afghanistan. This may be a new matter for some in the public domain. I wonder if you can elaborate, Dr. Tucker, the role of the SIS played in supporting the New Zealand Defence Operations.
Page six, thank you. Look, I don't want to go any further than the statement that I've already made this afternoon, but if I could, I'd be delighted to brief the committee in more detail on that in closed session.
I just have one question. I don't know if you can answer this, Mr. Tucker, but if the NSA was engaged in large-scale surveillance of New Zealand, would you, the SIS that is, would you expect that the SIS would be able to detect this?
No, because we don't look at how you detect such